Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we are in Fun Drive with a plethora of just fantastic educational profferings. You know, the more informed we are, the more we get to practice did you know? Because as a friend pointed out long ago, nobody minds being asked did you know? Unless we ask it in a snarky way. So the more informed we are, the better agents we are of did you know? And a reminder that much of the social media climate out there and, you know, is quick to chastise and punish those who speak out on behalf of our Palestinian kin subjected to cruel carnage. You know, a high school teacher was suspended in Tacoma Park, Maryland, one of the most liberal places in the world, for posting two very sensible, powerful, you know, pro-Palestinian cartoons. So, but not here on KPFA, right? This is Pacifica, the goddess of peace, you know, again, in Fun Drive, called to its most ardent dedication. And we have many, many, many wonderful things to offer. As you know, just a brief thing before I bring in our perfect guest. So we're offering the Reality Sutras, Seeking the Heart of Trika Shaivism. You'll correct me. And our guest, Shambhavi Sarasvati, will explain. All who donate anything will get the Israel-Palestine in Historical Context audio. The 100 Years at War on Palestine by Rashid Khalidi. He's everywhere. It's so good and powerful to be educated. That's for a pledge of $100. Likewise, Shambhavi's book for a pledge of $100 or $10 a month by calling 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org, where you will see many, many, many useful things that we all need to pledge. So here we go. It is the dark of the moon. It is when people gather to determine the course of culture. So let's do that. So we welcome spicy, deep-delving Shambhavi Sarasvati, diving into the dark underworld where our souls can speak more deeply to us. You know, and we'll explore her essay if she feels like it. Tyranny seeks to destroy community and then creates the toxic mimic, which is a cult. Very crucial. Anything that's anywhere is everywhere. Very crucial for us to have these distinctions. And the cult must have conflict and cruelty on which to feed. So we are here to animate community arising from the earth across all borders. Community be dedicated to collective well-being, democracy, equal rights, and a cult is a prison. So wonder and responsive augury conversing, this ongoing crisis of cruel carnage reminds us to practice everything we hold dear and invite in power to resolve. Shambhavi is the spiritual director of Jaya Kula. Her principal training is in the view and practices of Trika Shaivism and the Dzogchen tradition of Tibet. Her website is Jaya Kula, JayaKula.org. And one last little thing by way of intro. Venus is at 3+ Scorpio right now, trining Saturn. Our pledges, our dedication, powerful. Venus's image is: a youth carries a lit candle in a ritual, melding one's energies into a deeper matrix. Passing on the light overcomes fear about one's own flame going out, a feeling of nearness to mysterious forces, burning away emotional residue. So, welcome, Shambhavi.
Hi, thanks for having me, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad, and here we go. And also, it is Hanukkah beginning tonight. Do you want to say anything about the power of that opportunity?
I don't know much about the power of that opportunity. I grew up in a family that was only very minimally and occasionally observant. But I did receive, speaking of Hanukkah, a really beautiful Facebook message yesterday from someone who had read Mourning the Victims of the Cult of Israel, the article that you contacted me about. She was Jewish, saying that she hadn't observed Hanukkah in many years, but after reading the article, she decided to light the candles and pray for the release from suffering for all of the folks in Israel who have been subjected to such manipulation and tyranny themselves. So I just thought that was so sweet and moving.
Yes, that's great. And next week's guest will be Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb, who's been doing much Hanukkah honoring in this powerful way. So we go, that's great. And then just because I was perusing, you know, your Facebook realm where one of your allies had recommended the Ezra Klein Tarek Bakoni podcast. Did you listen to that?
I listened to a little bit of it, but I didn't get through the whole thing just for
time considerations. I went to sleep listening to it just because as a so nutrient rich conversing, there's so much that we aspire to contribute to, you know, deep nutrient rich conversing. Ta-Nehisi Coates and Rashid Khalidi also great thing, but also the interview with Tarek Bakoni on the history of Hamas. We want to know everything. And it was such a great example of really mature, informed, actual conversing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I just wanted to put that out
there. Yes, I mean, part of the reason I didn't finish it was because I really want to sit with it. When very shortly after October 7th, some folks that are students of mine were upset because I didn't condemn Hamas publicly. And that was a very rich moment for me because before October 7th, I don't know if I could have answered the question, who was Hamas? I grew up in a politically sort of somewhere in between liberal and left family. And I was aware of what was going on in Palestine in very sketchy outlines, but never kept up with the details. And I have, you know, really want to be very deep and careful about knowing what I know and knowing what I don't know. So I'm really looking forward to reading that article and trying to tease out some of those threads about Hamas that I'm not familiar with.
Right. And then just as a sidebar on the Patreon Visionary Activist show will be all the backstage notes and all the links to those articles and podcasts. So they covered so much and very much along your themes, too, cult versus community. But again, just informing, just deeply informing, did you know, and this is how this starts, and this is what's going on, and here's complexity. Complexity is our friend, right? And I so appreciated, you know, the complexity. Yeah, because friend, ally Jackie Tillerson sent me your essay, and I was like, what a bold, brave, spicy person this is. Let me get in touch with her as soon as possible.
I haven't called spicy before.
Oh well, okay. Well, may it continue. But it is very spicy in a. Well, you know, it's. I love the phrase. You know, dangerous in a good way, meaning we're going into a deep place, and you know, and also because the flack that I, you know, it's a hot reactive climate out there, and the flack that I've mostly received is, well, don't you care about the Israelis? I do. Grief, the community of grief across borders. And absolutely, if we'd been seeing a live streaming of the Hamas attack, you know, and there's many reports of what happened, we would have been like, oh my God, let's go, let's stop that, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a live streaming now, right, of Gaza, and so many intricate, and so that's like, what can we do?
Yeah, it's very overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
It's with us always. I mean, it's in the atmosphere. I feel so, you know, all of us really, you know, engaged. Even people who aren't engaged, we're engaged because it's in the collective field. It's like, you know, and then the power of intimacy. There's so many people I follow who are live streaming from Gaza, and some of them disappear forever. I mean, it's there are these relationships, and you know, and Yeah, anywhere you want to go to bring up, you too were asked why you didn't publicly express, you know, compassion. I go out of my way to go, absolutely, and yes, and I have wonderful Israeli friends who are talking about mm-hmm. how hard it is to be, you know, progressive, you know, Israeli Jew in progressive America, and mm-hmm. and something just to kind of toss back to you. We see in the videos of like this huge global rising of support for Palestinians. It's like, I mean, everywhere. It's New Zealand, mm-hmm. it's Korea, it's, you know, the Middle East. It's like the genie is out of the bottle. And mm-hmm. then how to toss to you, you know, how shall we honor this and not have it be kidnapped into enmity? You know, again, well, we can do, you know, I'll hand it back to you, you know, enmity and understanding about the corrupt Israeli regime at the moment, but not Israelis, not our fellow kin. Is that mm-hmm. something you're brewing?
Yeah, on? I mean, you know, I can address that sort of in two different ways. You know, I teach people how to do spiritual practice, and I've been doing spiritual practice since I was in my mid-20s. And I've also been involved in political activism since I was in my early teens. And my childhood was just steeped in all of the different liberation movements of the day and all the wars. And it's a huge list. I was kind of going over in my mind all the different kinds of movements and activities I was involved in as a very young child. I mean, my parents used to take me to anti-war marches, and this has just been a huge part of my life. And when I was in my 20s and 30s, I was very angry. And anger was a fuel for a lot of activities, and also, you know, creating near enemies, you know, enemies that were intimately involved with hurting people and and vilifying them. That was an acceptable and expected part of being an activist. And then as I did more practice, that anger really started to subside. And I think that one thing I've learned, especially in the past 10 years, is that the real fruit of the kind of practice that I do is that there's a genuine and spontaneous feeling of love for everyone that just is unstoppable and doesn't have any conditions whatsoever. Which doesn't mean that we still can't have incisive analysis and that we can't act to stop harm when we see it happening. So one of the reasons why I wrote that article was to open up compassion for Israelis and for the conditions that they've suffered and for how they got to this place, especially those Israelis that are most seen as the enemy by any kind of left that we could imagine. So, you know, those people have been harmed. And the more I learned about the kinds of manipulation that Israel and conditioning, the really deep, deep, deep conditioning that Israel is propagating as an entity and as an idea, the more and more I just felt this very deep sorrow and compassion for the people of Israel, and regardless, you know, even it may be especially for the people that are doing the most harm. So that was a real entry point for me, and I wanted to share that with my students and friends, and also to give people more freedom to experience a bigger range of emotions and to really get some very specific insight, you know, more multi-layered insight into what has happened to people. The other thing is that, much to my surprise, you know, many of the Jewish people I know are progressive or might even define themselves as left. They still, most of them seem to have either overt or unexplored subtle attachments to something that could be called Zionism or even to some idealized version of Israel. And I wanted to reach out to them and say, this is what I've discovered. I mean, I'm not an expert. Everything that I'm writing about right now is just things I'm discovering as I'm discovering them through conversations and encounters with people and readings and things like that. So nothing that I'm saying is from an expert point of view. But I really wanted to reach out and say, I see this, I see you, I see that this has happened, and to give people some tools to both feel supported and challenged to look more deeply.
Yes. Well, you know, that to which you are dedicated, you know, may it hum in all of us because it's so crucial, and the metabolizing of anger into deeper dedication, because the tyranny does terrible things, which causes us to be angry, and it feeds on that anger. You know, tyranny feeds on anger and conflict, and so there's the double bind, you know. And I do feel like here we are, you know, gathering on Pacifica, you know, and we're not in the immediate hot reactive field, so it behooves us to spiral into group mind and expanded repertoire that we would not in any way expect of people under the immediate grief and violence and sorrow. So there's that, but that's the thing, you know, which is your deep practice, you know, how do we respond rather than react? You know, again, reactivity is kind of like a cult thing, right? Reacting is not free. Cultivating ever expanding repertoire of responses is to ally ourselves with.
Well, unfortunately, reactivity is just as natural as spontaneity. I mean, you know, we're made this way. We come in with a full complement of limitations and some capacities also and some opportunities. But our limitations are not blameworthy. They are just the material that we have to work with. So my whole life has been based on an insight that people could be more free than we are. But also as I continue to study in my traditions, learning that the limitations we experience are not our fault, and they really are just something to work with. They're sort of the game that's being played here. But I also wanted to say about anger that there is a place for anger. I don't think anger is bad. So I know from my own experience in the various things that I've participated in, you know, including feminist movements and queer political movements, that there's a real place for anger. It's an important part of human maturation to get angry at what's been done to you. And yet, you know, in terms of spiritual life, that's not the destination. You know, it's a way station. But it is important, I think, to experience that anger. Anger has a lot of energy. It brings clarity. And it may be a blunt instrument at times, and it obviously can be used against us, as you pointed out. We can be conditioned to be angry, and that can actually obscure clarity. But there's also a kind of anger that's a part of an awakening that brings more clarity and brings more energy and frees something to be expressed. So I'm not against anger.
Right. No, and then I just often think of the wrathful Dakinis, right? The who really represent that in nature, which metabolizes poison, and it's said that they cook the nothing has to be true. They cook the toxin of anger into the tonic of wrath,
yes,
which is
exactly.
fierce protection of the community.
Exactly.
So
you know, the anger can be something that's very cloudy and conditioned, but it can also have this incredible blazing clarity that just cuts through everything and brings about a new circumstance.
Right, right. And then, yeah, I mean, there's many ways to go. And again, with your journey, you know, the political activism and the spiritual practice, which is kind of dedication of this show, Visionary Activist Show, for 27 years. But, you know, when we hear people who go, oh, I'm spiritual, so I don't pay any attention to politics. And it's like, mm-hmm. that's what they said in Germany in the 1939-40, where there was all mm-hmm. kinds of Buddhism and astrology and everything. And it's like, no, we don't pay attention to politics because that's not spiritual. Oops. And mm-hmm. and so this wedding, you know, if I think partly if we just redefine politics really on our own terms as simply a dedication to community well-being. Let's just start mm-hmm. there. That's what it is. And you know, the Greeks,
absolutely.
Our word idiot comes from Greek idiotos, which meant somebody who was so dingy as to not participate in the collective, you know, well-being. So, right. So here, you know, engagement, and then the quality of engagement. Mm-hmm. So, I think we're all changing our narrative. I mean, I started off because I learned from, you know, Israeli intelligence people in the 90s and then on and on, and it's just kind of a fact out there. It's part of the complex fact that the Israeli state, you know, dragged the blind sheikh out of prison and funded him to create Hamas. It's not the only strand, right, because it was mm-hmm. ready and there, but and has been funding Hamas until about a minute ago. And Bibi would speak about this proudly mm-hmm. and often in the media, going, isn't this clever? We funded Hamas as a foil to Arafat, so we keep the Palestinians fighting amongst themselves, so there will be no two-state and there will be no peace. Isn't that great? That mm-hmm. So where I was working with that is, so the betrayal of Israelis by Bibi, the betrayal by leaders, the betrayal of the Palestinians by Hamas, and then the community of the grieving across borders, because grief is really love and kinship, mm-hmm. grievance is hatred. But having listened to, excuse me, Ezra Klein and Tarek Bakoni, I'm like, oh, no, that's too simple too. You know, mm-hmm. the journey of Hamas is too simple. And we want to have things and then change, be informed and go, ooh, did you ever long ago, actually, I think I'm a little older than you, but 1970s movie, The Battle of Algiers, couldn't make that movie now, but it's an amazing movie in many left-wing, you know, it's The Battle of Algiers. And it is a successful empathic kinship with, I don't know what we say, the terrorist, I guess, but going, whew, okay. I remember going with my mom, who was a pretty conservative person, to see the movie uh-huh. Missing, which is about kidnapping by South American forces for, you know, a noble political aim. And walking out of the movie theater going, well, what would you have done, conservative mom? She's like, oh, I would have had to kill the hostages. I'm like, wow, that's right. Anyway, and then I just wanted to put on our work table a fantastic novel that I'm thinking of a lot called Bel Canto by Ann Pratchett. And it's about a Latin American dictator, loves opera. His friends fly in, his favorite opera singer for his birthday. Terrorists, or whatever word we're going to use, invade. Mm-hmm. They spend 2 months together and become a community. But we're seeing that, right, with the even just the little clip of the Hamas releasing the hostages going, bye-bye, bye-bye, mm-hmm. good luck, pray for me, mm-hmm. okay, bye-bye. You know, these little micro moments of kinship underneath all of the everything. So anyway, I just mm-hmm. wanted to bring that idea of, you know, kinship. Nathaniel Hawthorne said, let us not lose kinship even with the guiltiest among us. And you know, what you're doing and what, you know, Tarek, I'm losing his name here, I'll find it again, is doing is like to know the story going, oh, and not even have an opinion, just to go to know the story. So... Mm-hmm. I'm looking at your article again, too. You say, as a cult, Israel manipulates, seduces, rewrites, and suppresses histories and silences dissent. It tortures, kills, and imprisons without cause. It peddles influence, consolidates power with bogus religious justifications. Let me toss it to you, because there's an interesting thing happening now, which is the Israeli state propaganda machine is kind of dissolving. You know, even like BBC and CNN called them out, going, that doesn't look like proof of...
I noticed that the Western press was finally starting to critique those failed efforts.
Right. And it is like even... And then we know, you know, again, sifting through, aspiring to not set off tripwires, you know, that there were no 40 beheaded babies. There was no baby cooked in an oven. There was one baby who was killed in Israel, and that's terrible, terrible, terrible. But it was not 40. And now there's there's so many responsible journalists, you know, doing deep delving work that, you know, the coming out, why aren't you attacking the systematic use of rape by Hamas? And it's like, oh, well, that looks sketchy too. So you were putting out, you are putting out, you know, your article as guidelines for people to discern where they're being.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the reasons why Israel's PR is kind of falling apart, aside from the fact that they're committing genocide in full view of the world, you know, that's the biggest reason. But it is such a deeply, deeply supremacist culture. You know, and being that, there's just this inability to perceive the intelligence of other people. So there's this assumption that whatever they do, however stupid it is or simplistic it is, other people are going to be fooled. And for some reason, you know, maybe because they've bought off so many Euro-American politicians and everyone's been turning a blind eye and supporting them to act with impunity all these years, you know, maybe that has also caused them to have even a deeper inability to perceive other people perceiving them. I mean, Bell Hooks wrote about this. She said, you know, that wonderful, wonderful formulation from margin to center, where she said the people in the center, which Israelis definitely feel that they are, they don't understand that they're being watched, they're being observed. They don't observe the people on the margins because they don't have to. But the people on the margins are observing the center as a matter of life or death. So actually, the people on the margins have much more knowledge and clarity about those acting in supremacist ways with impunity. They have much more insight. And now, you know, many more people in the world are having more clarity about that. They're being, you know, in a sense, one of the things I've been most interested in exploring is that new chant that's going around, in the millions and the billions, we are all Palestinians. And it's so deeply resonant, and it really moves me, but I don't quite know why it makes sense, because, you know, there were no other liberation movements where anybody said any such thing. And in fact, in these days, you would be roundly slammed down for appropriation if you said any such thing. But suddenly now you have hundreds of thousands of people all over the world. Somehow there's this sense in which we're recognizing how oppressed so many of us have been by these systems of capitalism and so-called democracy, and in this country, neoliberalism. You know, there's some kind of opening up sense that everybody, or all these people chanting this, recognize that they're next, or that they've already had their heads on the chopping block and they just didn't know it. I haven't really quite articulated this to myself yet, but I do think that there's a way in which Israel is being now seen that they haven't been seen before by some, well, they've been seen by a lot of people, but just not by, you know, as many people. Right. So they're just like conducting these really stupid things in full view of the public.
Yeah.
You know, like putting up.
Yeah, no,
putting
no. And Well, what you know, just you know, from my own realm of divination, right? And you have yours, and we love that. You know, divination is.
Yeah.
It says maybe, you know, part of what it is to be human is to discern the pattern of evolutionary intelligence, the liveliest possibility available at any moment, and kind of dedicate to that. You know, and so I've been working with and wondering about the chart of Israel when it's born, May 14th, 1948, with the sun at 23 degrees of Taurus, and Uranus, the principle of revolution and equality and bonding with nature, is going forwards and backwards and forwards over this spot. It doesn't happen often. It's part of our whole big dream, and it's like, ooh, liberated. Liberated from what? Again, Israeli friend of mine said, do you think the state of Israel will survive? And I go, not in its current form. You know, whether it's an individual or a collective, Uranus is about, you know, either we embrace the assignment or it happens to us, right? It's like, well, what would that mean? You know, and for yourself, you know, what would good liberation awakening mean for state of Israel and world? You know, and I realize where myself, where we've all been colonized, including our imagination, you know, and often if I'm going to praise somebody who's doing good work in government, I can feel myself cringing in front of the kind of nya-nya of progressive world. And it's like, no, breathe into it. Breathe into it. Yeah, this is a good thing. Do not cringe. And then I realized also, like, well, where, you know, where do we want to really liberate our imagination, you know, that, you know, this is so huge, and underneath it's like, oh, and the violence of the unsupervised, you know, Mars team, and really what it is like the community of the Earth wants to kind of rise up. And do you have any, you know, radical dreams, like, you know, forget realism, you know, situation's so
okay,
dire we can't afford the luxury of realism.
Yeah.
Never mind
There's
realism.
There's nothing.
What?
Well, thank you for letting me off the hook that way.
Oh, no, yeah, no, none of us should be constrained by realism. It's right. It'll just slow us down. What would you feel having done such a good, you know, delving into the cult of Israel? You know, and Uranus's little glyph, it looks like an archaic jail key. It's, remember the Hafez thing, small man builds prisons for everyone, but the wise woman ducks under the moon, tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners, which is kind of what you're doing, right? I mean, that could be one of your middle names. Shambhavi tosses keys to beautiful, rowdy prisoners, Sarasvati. You know, you know, it's like unlock yourself and pass it on.
Or,
right?
Or so, Shambhavi opens the door and everyone still cowers inside their cage.
Those elephants
get taken to the, finally after, you know, 6 years of torture and being in prison, they get let into some preserve and they have them in an enclosure and they won't come out.
Oh, I've got some other stories, because the thing I also often use is, yeah, an animal that's been, you know, captured by humans is, or rehabbed, you know, but is often, you know, brought to its cage, you know, in the meadow abutting the forest, and they open the door, right? And it takes a while for it to leave. And I can feel this. It's like, well, what are the humans going to do to me now? But then something happens. There's a shift of wind. There's a rustle in the grass. The forest wants the animal, and the animal wants the forest, and it's gone. You know, in that
well,
moment.
You know, I mean, my completely fantasy version of life on Earth is that yes. we would be talking about things in terms of cultures of care and caring for people, because it's, you know, it's really hard to understand how to get from like a system of ethics or a system of laws or a system that's based on judgment. Oh, I'm sorry, on justice. To actually caring about each other. And the only thing I think that is going to create this kind of radical change is if we find some way to actually care about each other. So in my version of the world, there would be no states, there would be no borders,
yeah,
there would be
there
cultures,
go.
There would be more sort of impromptu kinds of zones of coalescing, and that we would take care of the earth and animals and each other, and we would have healthy systems of medicine and all that. But in terms of, yeah, that's a different realm.
No, yes, I just want to do a shout out.
Realm that we live in.
That's all right. No, forget the realism. What you just said is exactly right. Exactly right. And see, cooperators are standing by. I mean, thank goodness it's not just us. And I think this humbling. I mean, your offering just now, your prayer, you know, is, well, grief and poignancy are kinship. I mean, I think so many people following the plight. Hour by hour, day by day, you know, of the Palestinians, it's like deep caring. And that's part of the frustration and rage, like, and exasperation with Biden going, you know.
But it's part of the wisdom, Carolyn, that we would be so many hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions around the world, watching in real time, forming these very heart-based relationships with people on the ground in Gaza. This is the wisdom of this moment that we are learning. Yes. Some of us are learning to care. Some of us, through, you know, having our hearts broken, are having our hearts opened. And I think this is an opportunity for human beings.
Yeah. Well, you know, I follow this woman, Basin, who does these daily reports. They're so wonderful. They're so powerful. They're so poignant. Sometimes they're so beautiful. And her last one was like, I don't know if I'm going to live long. I can't leave the mattress. I'm full of virus. You know, there's just terrible. And then somebody in the comments section, whom I know, said, you know, I hope I can get in touch with her because I know where there's, you know, medicine that could help her in Gaza. I'm like, oh, it's just, so synchronicity at work going, well, who brought what and how can we help each other, you know, through these miracles of synchronicity as well. You know, it's part of what we're pledging to. But, you know, and then let me say we don't want to be too fascinating. We don't want to be too fascinating. Our wonderful guest is Shambhavi Sarasvati, and we are deep delving, and this is also our pledge fund drive, and there's people to thank. So hang in with me a little bit, Shambhavi, because I want you to talk about your book briefly. So thank you so much. David in San Francisco, A History of Modern Palestine. Thank you. Ronald W. in Santa Rosa, yeah, The 100 Years War on Palestine, A History of Settler Colonialism and Resistance. It's such a good book. He's such a smart man. That's so wonderful. And Ronald says, the big obstacle we are having to get over the Palestine and Israel is that on the backside of the dollar. Oh, what? Never mind. Okay, I'll read that later. Thank you. Pentagrams and things. And thank you also, Anonymous. Anonymous gives so much. You know, Anonymous is such a good person. We should run Anonymous for president in San Francisco. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. And then let me remind everybody that, you know, we have wonderful guests. We have this show itself that we're pledging for. But we're also pledging for this realm now here to be able to cover, you know, intimately and inform, you know, all the pledged thank yous are super worthy. And again, this is what is unique to this station, this network, Pacifica, Goddess of Peace. Unlike the hot reactive thing, although everything is kind of changing. And let me remind people, we are offering our guest's book, The Reality Sutras, Seeking the Heart of Trika Shaivism, for a pledge of $100 or $10 a month by our guest, Shambhavi. What do you find most useful about this book to us now?
Well, this book is aimed at people who are interested in non-dual spiritual traditions, which Trika Shaivism from Kashmir is one of them. It's also about a tradition. It's one of a number of traditions that are called direct realization traditions, where through just our ordinary senses, we can perceive the nature of reality and the nature of the self. So in order to learn about this kind of tradition, if you didn't have books like the one that I've written, you'd really have to read a bunch of academic tomes and obscure scriptures and like run around collating hundreds of things, because it's very hard to get this information in a way that's digestible for a normal person. And pretty much every book I've written has been about trying to digest this tradition for regular people. And so it's written in very short sections, you know, 2 to 5 pages at most, explaining the cosmology, what is the nature of the self according to this tradition, what is spiritual practice for, what is God, what is reality, how do things come to be and go out of being, what's up with death, you know, all those kinds of really foundational, what we call view questions. So, you know, if you're interested in those questions, then you might find something useful here.
That's great. And let's think of this as part one, because I would love to explore further, you know, sometime when we're not in Fun Drive, like, what is up with death? All right, and we'll have Shambhavi return for what's up with death? What is that? And can we renegotiate how people are born and die on this planet? Because it seems unusually hard. Yeah, that's great. So again, you can have Shambhavi's wonderful book as a thank you gift, right, for a pledge of $100 or $10 a month by calling 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org, and you'll see so many wonderful things. Anyone who donates anything, Oh, that's so great. Okay, Cheryl and Alameda just donated for something I'm also really interested in, The Golem of Brooklyn, a novel, which sounds completely great. I'd like to do it. So thank you, Cheryl. That's wonderful. And more anonymous, thank you. But so anybody who donates anything, the pledge, I mean, we'd like, you know, $500 bazillion, but it's also, we get bonus points for anything we do that we just add dedication to. By the giving of this money to this station, may it be that whatever, I mean, you don't have to, you know, impose that on the person answering the phone, but you can do it in your heart. You know, and to everybody who donates anything, you get the Israel-Palestine in Historic Context audio. Super great. The 100-Year War on Palestine by Rashid Khalidi. He's everywhere. He's indefatigable. He's himself. Original, authoritative, important 100-Year War. It behooves us to really know, and then again we can be effective agents of, did you know about this? Did you know about that? Super important out there. Right, and then Cheryl just pledged for, this caught my eye, The Golem of Brooklyn, a novel. It's an epic romp through Jewish history and the American present that wrestles with the deepest questions of our humanity, the conflicts between faith and skepticism, tribalism and independence, and vengeance and healing. Oh, there's good, for a pledge of $100. So again, that's good. We're being medium fascinating. People are pledging. 800-439-5732. 800-439-5732. And then, you know, something that I'll have you back also after you've listened to the Ezra Klein thing, but there was such rich moral complexity, because Ezra Klein says, you know, when people tried nonviolent ways to draw attention to Palestine, like, you know, boycott, divestment, you know, nobody paid attention. And we go, this is a conundrum before the council, right? I don't in any way favor cruelty, you know, at all. Although the Battle of Algiers makes an interesting point, but
maybe
what
not
is
cruelty,
it about us?
What about armed resistance?
Well, it's.
I mean, that's been a question forever.
Yeah. It is. It is a question forever. And the Battle of Algiers and Missing and Bel Canto take are extraordinary works that seek kinship underneath all of that, in which even my mother identified with the armed resistance. That was an amazing movie. My mother was like, yeah, yeah, you know, screw the colonialists, and she is one, or was one. The power of, you know, my friend Deborah Felmuth, living in Syria and Vermont, like you do, I mean, always says, you know, salam and shalom is not the absence of conflict, but the presence of oneness. We're all in this dream together. But I'm so glad that you, you know, absolutely dissolved realism for a moment and went into the kinship of the earth underneath everything, because that's the guiding. You know, it's a time of necessary miracles. And the kinship across borders of brief. You know, and somebody gives a long thing to you here. Anonymous again, fantastic. Thank you, Shambhavi Sarasvati, for having the courage to go against the New Age ethos of anger bad. Yeah, that's good. So here's what, well, it's a long, wonderful thing. I'll send it to you. Something drops at least. That's good.
Can I just quote the Dalai Lama? He had the best teaching on armed resistance ever. He said, if someone's coming at you with a gun, shoot them, but in the leg.
That's good. That's good. And I actually heard him speak in South Africa, and he was, you know, and somebody asked him a question about, you know, well, what if there are bad people who want to do you harm? And he's like, oh, he actually said it this way. He goes, oh, hell, I don't know. Maybe get one strong dog. So, right.
He's very practical.
He's very practical, you know. Bless his, you know, complex thing. And again, for all of us, and yeah, no, anger is here. That's right. And you get a special shout out from Scotts Valley, California, going, yay, anger! There's a little red fumes rising out of Scotts Valley. But I would just add, like, I think it's good to work it. I think it's good to wrathful dakini it, but not suppress it. No, because, you know, part of our pickle, you know, I do track, you know, my own astro mytho divination, you know, when Pluto stations, these are not causative things, these are descriptive things, but it says that is volatile, dangerous, and explosive in direct proportion to the force of its exclusion. It's like, and it's the illusion of what we call sudden, right? Something suddenly happened. It's like, no, it was brewing for a very long time if we were paying attention, and then suddenly it became visible, right? And isn't, you know, part of your practice to be in touch with the invisible and what's really going on, you know, backstage and everything?
Well, the thing is, everything becomes visible and palpable when your senses are open enough. So we call it the invisible when that just, from my perspective, just means very subtle. Or what cannot be perceived by most people. But the whole practice that I'm engaged in is called opening the gates of the senses, which includes the mind. The mind is considered a sense organ in these traditions. So that when the gates of the senses are open wide enough, we're perceiving those subtle phenomena and subtle wisdom with as much tangibility as you perceive the chair that you're sitting on or the table that you're sitting at.
Right. And then it's also people who report on, you know, going, visiting, living in Palestine and Gaza, go, this is not surprising. Just, again, volatile, indirect purport. You can't push that much down without, again, I can feel out there in the field going, what about the Israelis? And it's like, yes, no, kinship with the Israelis, with those who suffered. And as you point out, I think, you know, kinship for all who've been snookered, you know, oh, here's Anonymous again. Thank you. Good. She says, I want the book about non-dualistic spirituality, not sure what it is. So she's pledging for anything. Bless your heart. It's, here it is. It's the Reality Sutras. There you go. The book about non-dualistic spirituality. There you have the title. Thank you, Anonymous in Mill Valley. That's good.
Thank
All right,
you.
We're creeping into almost respectable donations here.
Wonderful.
Let me,
Can I put my fundraiser hat on?
Yes, please. Oh, that would be so wonderful. Yes, thank you.
Well, I just wanted to say that Pacifica Radio, mainly KPFA and BAI, which I know doesn't exist anymore, but Pacifica Radio has been a companion and a support for me since I was in my 20s. And I just would like everybody out there who's any kind of an activist at all to imagine what it would be like if these Pacifica Radio stations didn't exist. I mean, that would be really a light going out. So please support and keep that candle burning.
Right. So that's the always useful fear-based pitch. I mean, that's...
Is it?
Right. Well, it is. Like, imagine it going out. And we go, right. Now imagine it thriving, you know, with abundant resources to really dree. It's weird because I do feel, you know, it's always true, and it's even truer now, that this time, this moment that calls for kinship and complexity and deep learning and information. Mm-hmm. This is the time when this show and this station, you know, really want to be influential, not have an impact, mm-hmm. no, a short violent encounter, a long influence, because mm-hmm. there, you know, so many people, you know, get in touch with me. Oh, good, Anonymous in Oakland says, woof, 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 waging peace with all flora, fauna, and our friends beyond the binary. Yes, thank you for your magic number donation. Yeah, you can pick a magic number to donate, as Anonymous in Oakland did, by calling 800-439-5732 or online kpfa.org. And yeah, thanks for Shambhavi saying, yeah, no, this is important. The only non-corporate radio network left in America. There we go. Mm-hmm. De-bamboozling. Or you can kind of like, oh, thank goodness, you know, to find some actual narratives.
But also wacky things, which are very important to me.
Say what?
There's all of the political analysis and even organizing. I mean, during the Persian Gulf War, KPFA did a lot of like on the spot organizing, which was pretty incredible. But in any case, yes. There's also fun and wacky stuff on KPFA, which I always appreciated.
Yeah, no, we like to do some of that over here too. But absolutely. And then, and somebody else just pledged. Thank you very much. That's wonderful. 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org. Yeah, because as you mentioned, Shambhavi, one of the things that is, I mean, radio is wonderful. It's magic. We're invisible, right? We're invisible. It's spirits talking. And one of the things that's great about this, the community of this show, is that it continues when the show's off the air. People connect and they organize and they get in touch with each other, mm-hmm. and they email me and I put them in touch with guests and things. It's a vital community resource, right? It's not a cult. It's not a cult. It is occult, but not a cult. There we go. It's an occult, anti-cult kind of dynamic. So yes, there's that, and being not bamboozled. So I'm going to stay dedicated here, but I can't help myself. So in your, you know, spicy deep delving, you know, essay, mourning for those suffering from the cult of Israel. Did you get people being really grumpy, or did mostly people go thank you?
Most people said thank you. I've been surprised all along at everything I've been posting and saying how few people have unfriended me on social media. One person did scare me by telling me that her relatives were in Mossad and I was wrong about everything, and suddenly I became enormously paranoid that I was going to become some object of a Mossad operation. But no, I've experienced very, very little pushback or, you know, a few people, somebody wrote me some long thing that was very spiritually bypassy. I've gotten comments, but not more than usual, you know, that I shouldn't be politically engaged because that's not spiritual. But really, the engagements have been very productive and tender and appreciative.
Right. No, that's great. And let me again exhort us, with just so we can just get into four figures. Come on, team. Not that I'm worried about the grown-ups. It's just us here. We want to do it for the station by calling 800-439-5732 or kpfa.org, and you'll see wonderful, wonderful things. I'm so grateful to the Fund Drive team who put together such a really great educational selection of things, like, because that's part of what's happening that we were agreeing about, Shambhavi, is that people are really getting educated, like, ooh, I didn't know. Ooh, here, read this, here, this thing. As a crucial part of this.
Yeah, I feel like I've gotten like a half a bachelor's degree in the last 2 months.
Right. Well, there's so many great people and people that I haven't always liked their work, you know, like Gabor Mate, you know, but doing mm-hmm. stepping up. I mean, people are rising to the occasion. He did a mm-hmm. He's everywhere. Great thing going, yes, and I was discriminated against as a Jew, and you know, and when I heard about the Israel, the Jewish state, what a beautiful, beautiful dream, how wonderful. I became a Zionist, and then I realized that our dream was someone else's nightmare, and I couldn't go on.
Yeah, I saw that.
Again, it's powerful you know, again, we're good. And somebody else just pledged for your book. You're a big hit, Shambhavi. Robert in American Canyon, California, thank you for expanding our minds and spirits. Anger fuels advocacy and change. All right, there's a lot of pro-anger people. I like anger, too. You've changed my mind. In fact, I'm angry that more of you aren't calling up. Right, and directed anger, but I think that's Robert's point, too, because, you know, I lived with actual coyote for 19 years, and Stella Coyote, you know, if she couldn't get at something on the other side of the fence that she wanted to attack, she would just attack anything, you know, me, the other dog. Mm-hmm. It's like, so we wanted focused, you know, in some way, not tantrum yoga. Right, oh, good, and San Francisco, somebody else. We're doing pretty good, Shambhavi. We're doing responsible, respectable work.
But can I also do another plug for... that there's also yes. a place for chaotic anger,
oh,
not directed.
Okay, yes, go for it. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You're completely welcome.
There's
an ode
just,
to chaotic
there's just
anger.
Got to be a place in people's recovery from oppression for being messy mm-hmm. and not good actors mm-hmm. and just letting it out in whatever shape it comes out in, whatever form it comes out in. Not that I want that to last forever, but I do think there's a place for it and it's healthy.
That's great. And let's all have a little chaotic anger expression right now. Call up fueled by chaotic anger. Yeah. 800-439-5732. And shake your head around in a chaotic dance. Like the Congo dances that only men used to do until the women in Cuba said, we're going to do them too. Take the anger of the community and express it into... you know, into energy to change the community. That's many dances are doing that. That's great. Okay, thank you, Anonymous in San Francisco. All right, we're doing, you know, medium pretty good. Okay. I think we've got 30 seconds here. But thank you so much, Shambhavi Sarasvati. And it's grand to Kahoot. And yes, speaking out for pledge for chaotic anger. It seems to be a hit. People really like the anger part. You know, call 800-439-5732 if you're angry in a chaotic way. Or if you know somebody who is. Channel it into support for the radio station and support for community and politics is engagement and completely as spiritual as anything. So thank you. Thank you, Shambhavi Sarasvati. And my pleasure. And thank you, Kirsten. Thomas, always our wonderful board op. I'm Caroline Casey. Keep calling. Keep calling. Thank you for expanding our minds and spirits. Oh, yeah, that's the anger part again. All right, thank you. Yay, anger. We love anger. Call 800-439-5732 if you're angry or not. KPFA.org, and we will reconvene next week with Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb. Woof.